This program was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, Irirangi Tamotu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Jason Milden,
Stuart Burks,
John Ward,
and I'm Finlay Mason. Now, we are here today and we're talking a little bit about early days in Kairanga, and we have Alison with us, who was born and grew up and started her schooling in Kairanga.
Yes, I did. I was born in 1948, so turned 70 in a few weeks. So, yes, I know the Kairanga pretty well.
So, how far from Palmerston North were you?
That's a good question, because the boundaries of Palmerston North have altered as the years have gone by. So I can remember where, for example, going down Botanical Road, on the right-hand side, there was no development at all. So these days, by car, it's about 4 minutes to get to the urban area.
So then how did you travel then? Is that also by car?
Well, in terms of vehicles, my grandparents had a Wolseley car, which they had brought from England after their 1938-39 trip to Europe. We had a little standard car with the running board, and we moved from that to a brand new car, a Morris Oxford, which was incredibly exciting, but we had it for the next umpteen years, because although farmers were earning the overseas funds through the sale of meat, wool, etc., exports, we didn't get any funds that enabled us to purchase new motor cars. So we had this old Morris Oxford that got more and more cranky and embarrassing, until finally my father said, "That's it," and we went to town. You could buy European cars.
But you said they were earning money, but they didn't have the money to spend.
Yes, what used to happen was you sold your product overseas on your own account. So you earned overseas funds. But then the government brought in a system whereby they said, "No, you will do it through our system. We will get the overseas funds. You will just get paid."
So it wasn't a problem of the money, it was a problem of overseas funds to buy imports. Were there big controls on imports?
Very much so. And in fact, it was only up until about the mid to late 50s that those were relaxed somewhat.
Lord Mayor's Black Budget.
And at that time then, a 1 year, or those people who had access to overseas funds would replace their car on an annual basis, and that car that they were trading in would sell for as much as they paid for it, or even more, because of the state of the market. Now, you were farming then in the Kairanga area there. It was the and you went, did your schooling at Kairanga.
Yes.
Were you very far away? Was the farm far away from the school?
No, the farm actually bordered the school, but there were three houses on the property. The nearest one was where my great-grandparents and their family had first gone to, but in my lifetime it was my grandparents and an unmarried uncle lived there. Then next to that, a little further away, from the school are three great aunts and married sisters of my grandfather lived there, and they were the three souls who the headmaster of the school, who actually went for I think two or three generations of children, Richard and I, my brother and I, when researching, we discovered that they were described as, oh, what was the word? Unteachables.
So transport to school was not a problem for you.
No, we were the next house along, so half a mile. I started school by tricycling.
Next schools would have been Rongatier and Longburn, so you didn't have a very big catchment area there, I suppose.
No, in fact, Ankopane was very close. But that's the interesting thing. Your life revolved very much around your district. You knew all those families, all those people. And those Newbury, Rongatier, Kopane, Longburn were sort of another place, really, unless you played Saturday sport.
So what was the school then? Role and classroom numbers?
I think during my lifetime, school time there, it never got beyond 100. And it was three rooms, three teachers, three rooms.
And of course in those days the headmaster lived in the area and was an essential part of the community, wasn't
he? Yes, very much so.
Yes.
Yes, it was. They were always male.
So were there, if it was a local community, were they sort of many children in each family at that stage? There were two of you, but was that
normal? No, three of you and mine. And quite often, of course, in my lifetime, they'd be sort of post-war babies. So many of the fathers, not mine, but many of the fathers had been in World War II. And so they would come back. There might be a child born before the war, and then there was either all or some.
And I guess typically of country schools, you did your primary education went right through to all standard six, two, and then you embarked on secondary school.
Yes.
Now that was a bus trip for you.
Well, that was interesting. There was a bus that took people to the Tech, Queen Elizabeth Tech in Rangitikei Street, and a bus that took people to Girls High and Boys High. But Freiburg High School, a co-ed school, had started up, and my parents thought that a co-ed education would be best for us. But there was no bus. So my sister would take the school bus as far as the Tech. Then she had a bike, which she had to ride furiously to get to Freiburg and similarly to get home.
My recollection of coming into school in a similar manner on the school bus was that we always got there just on time, if not late. So I can imagine your sister arriving in the same circumstances. There's always a late starter at school.
Hot and bothered. But then what happened, of course, as soon as she turned 15, she got her license. This was the plan. My father bought a little Austin from the neighbour, and my sister would drive to school, so quite possibly we might have been the first family in Palmerston North where pupils went to school in a car. And so my sister drove, and then of course when she left school my brother was meant to take over, but he was much more keen to have a motorbike. And then I got my license at 15 and drove every day to school, parked it in a friend's property that bordered the school, and I would hop over the fence. So I was always late. but I have never once had a detention because I perfected the ability to walk that wouldn't be seen from the people on the gate, that would get me into trouble, and then I would time it just so the assembly was finishing and I could slip in and mix and mingle with the people coming out of assembly.
Now, you said earlier then that it was your parents' decision that you should go to a co-ed school. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that now?
Yes, that's an interesting one. My sister and I often think about that. We actually think we would have enjoyed a single-sex school better. But also, so I was a bit of a schoolgirl's own annual type of person, and I had always wished that I went to boarding school.
Yes, well, that was out of the question for most families, I think.
Why did you think single sex might have been better?
When you're that age, teenager, it's quite tough growing up, because you are growing up. Excuse me. And so there you are, boys, girls together, and situations where it's a little awkward, a little bit embarrassing and uncomfortable. And both my sister Judy and I have talked about this, and we found it quite difficult.
Were there many friendships between boys and girls at the school, or was it more semi-relational?
Well, it depended who you were.
Yeah.
So, yes, of course, at that time, that was quite significant. So there were the girls and the boys who kind of got together, boyfriend-girlfriend kind of relationships. And I guess, yes, that was noticed and sort of discussed.
But were some just normal friendships, sort of platonic friendships as well, studying together and other activities?
That wasn't possible for us because we were in the country, and that I think that was another thing that was quite difficult, which is we couldn't mix and mingle because we were home.
That's one of the interesting aspects of growing up in a rural community. It is the centre of your social life, sporting activity, and that seems to come to an end when you get off to secondary school and there's a whole wider community you'd never sort of known about before. Did you maintain your sort of Kairanga links throughout your schooling then?
Well, yes, in fact, I suppose the person you'd say is my oldest friend in terms of longevity of the friendship is a girl who started... She was younger, a little younger, but our families knew one another. I remember her first day at school. I don't remember mine, but I remember hers because the teacher said, "Alison, you know, Cece, you look after her." And so she's still my friend. But it is interesting. I haven't maintained any real friendships from secondary school at all.
I suppose it's different for a girl because, like you, at 15 I got my licence and soon thereafter got a car. And then that enabled me to maintain these new contacts that I had made at secondary school, and virtually that became the end of my sort of association with my community I grew up with, I guess. But then I was more mobile. I think in that age their parents sort of were more likely to allow their sons to hop in their car and drive off where they wanted to, where you would have still been somewhat restricted.
No, my parents were very liberal in that sense, that we weren't kind of tied or supervised, or, and I think that goes back to a childhood where you were extremely free and safe, and you might have done crazy things, tree climbing, etc. Parents were not watching, weren't telling you what to do. We'd leave in the morning on a Saturday and come back when we were hungry.
So you weren't restricted in the use of your car to just commuting back and forth to school then?
No. Okay.
What, was there an issue with teenage pregnancies then at your school?
Well, yes.
Was that very common or just a few extreme
cases? No, not common, but it was, you know, noticed, so, talked about.
So how were they dealt with?
The child would just disappear out of school.
And then after the birth, the child would be, the baby would be adopted and the girl would go back to school? Or you wouldn't see her again afterwards?
I don't personally remember someone coming back to school, but I
recall
would think
many
at that time the majority by far would be adopted.
Okay.
But the going back to the friendship thing, the because I left at the end of the lower sixth and actually went overseas, that did cause quite a break in terms of connections with people from school.
So what sort of social activities were available to you at the time then, outside school or sporting activities within the school system?
There were, but again, sports teams, that sort of thing were difficult for us because it relied on getting together for practices, etc., which we couldn't do. So I would say none of us in my family ever were team sports people. We had a tennis court at home, played tennis. We could go swimming at the school pool. There were no restrictions on day or night. In fact, a friend and I, we used to sneak out of the window late at night and go swimming in the moonlight. My parents never ever knew that that happened.
In what pool?
In the Kairanga school pool.
Okay.
Yes. It's been filled in now. It's a car park, I think.
Oh. That being was a feature of the rural schools. Was the generally, they were built at that time by the parents, and parents sort of had took ownership, I suppose, and therefore the schools made them available. Anyone who was interested was issued with a key so they could use the pool at any time.
They weren't even locked in those days. No, it was just completely free.
There was a convenient fire hydrant as well.
Local table tennis group. I used to go with my father to that. But then we were also guides and scouts, and we were really fortunate because the scoutmaster was Pat Snoxall, who you will all have heard of, probably.
Through what?
He produced that many.
Oh, he started producing all the
Boy Scout.
Yes. What are those things?
Oh, not the jamborees.
The things they put up on the stage.
Gang shows. Yes, he started producing the gang shows, and then, of course, he moved on to other productions. And his wife, Cecily Snoxall, she was the guide mistress, and she was English, and we were very, very fortunate because the guides, we were run more like scouts and did much more exciting things than other guide groups did. So we'd go camping, hiking, trekking, firelighting. It was wonderful.
How far did you venture with your camping activity?
We'd probably just go, because again, I think it was actually breaking some rules what we were doing. We'd go to somebody's farm and camp. But in terms of the trekking and tracking, we'd all just hop on our bikes and bike to the river, for example, and do lay trails and go tracking.
Oh, did he have things called wide games? In England, they call them wide games, where you go to a great big park and there's all the maybe competing teams and things, but signs and maps and stuff just spread over a very large area.
No, we didn't mix and mingle so much, except for big organised camps with girls from other groups would be there. But we used to think we had far more fun. Because it was very, very free.
Yeah. At a country school, did you have all the pet and calf days?
Yes, we did.
And yes, what were they like? What day. Happened? Lamb and calf.
Yes, lamb and calf day. And also then you did things like decorated saucers. So there'd be various other indoor-type displays that you'd put in for the competition. And of course, you'd get certificates for first, second, third, runner-up, highly commended, or you'd get ribbons, etc., etc.
Did you have things like lamb calling? If you have with the children with their pet lambs, and they have to try and call the lamb and see if they can, and you find which children had just grabbed a lamb out of the field that morning.
Well, I have to say we were sheep and beef farmers, but I don't think I ever won anything for one of my lambs.
No, I remember one out at a cowshed school, which does those sorts. A lot of people are from town, but there was, still had the country atmosphere. And there was one young lad from a farming family, and he had a calf, and he was really stocky young lad. And he just, the calf didn't want to go, and he just dragged it across the display area.
That is an interesting change that has occurred in the rural schools now. You speak of a time when, of course, everyone at the school were from a farming background, but now, of course, city dwellers see these as an interesting, exciting way for their children to be brought up. So the lamb and the calf have sort of changed and become the pet dog and the pet cat and the parrot and things like that.
And the pet worm. There's one child turn up with a jar full of mud and a pet worm inside.
And that actually is quite an interesting point, because we were very much country farming, from farming families. But when the intermediates came into being, the government at the time was trying to chop schools off at Standard 4 and ascend Form 1 and 2 to intermediates. And of course this contributed to breaking down country life in a way, and Kairanga was one that fought and won to stay a school right up to the end of Form 2.
I think they called
it
the area school, didn't they?
And then, of course, a country school was seen by town people as a good place to go. And so, of course, our students from Palmerston North, in our case, were enrolled at Kairanga. Well, of course, that changes the flavour of the school. So I kind of feel that the things that these pupils were coming for, in fact, were diminished, because it was no longer a properly country school.
Did you find, though, that farms were getting larger and families were having fewer children, so either you get a falling rolls or you'd need an injection from outside?
No, I think it was more that in our case the boundaries of the urban Palmerston North were creeping closer and closer. And also the 10-acre block, that started to change things.
And on the other hand, of course, although in your case you were beef and sheep farmers, the area was predominantly dairy farming, and of course there were dairy factories very closely spaced in the community. And therefore, when farms started to become amalgamated, and at the same time tanker collections started to occur, that too had an effect on the roles of these rural schools. Mm-hmm. Well, we've just about come to our end of our time, Alison. We'd like to hear more about this trip to 5 months away in Europe, but that'll have to wait for another occasion. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.